Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com. You're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org, a nonprofit, member-supported radio station. We're millions strong, with folks tuning in from over 200 countries. We are education. We are entertainment. We are the future of food. May is our membership drive. Become a member and support us while receiving e-newsletters, advanced invites, special discounts, and a membership card. We need your support. Visit our website and click the donate button to become a member today. Thank you for believing in us and enjoy the show.
Well, hello and welcome. You're listening to Chef's Story on HeritageRadioNetwork.org, and I'm Dorothy Cann Hamilton from the International Culinary Center, and we're sitting in the container at Roberta's in Brooklyn, and today I have the incredibly wonderful Mark Vidal with me, the chef of Boca Ria. Hola, chef. Hola. How are you? ¿Cómo están, Benny? We're so happy to have you here today.
Thank you. I
went past Boca Ria last night. It was jamming. It was packed.
Yes.
I mean, a Tuesday night in the city.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Pretty amazing.
Yeah. We're going to get into Boca Ria mm-hmm. later, but I think you come from one of the greatest places in the world, from Barcelona.
Yes.
Right? Barcelona?
Barcelona.
Barcelona.
Exactly.
Yes. I think James Michener called it the champagne of Spain. It is mm-hmm. such a gorgeous, gorgeous city. What was it like growing up there? I mean, did you grow up in the major part of the city?
Mm-hmm. In the neighborhood of Sagrada Familia. My family had a restaurant there, so I was six, because in the beginning of my life, my first 6 years, I lived in a little town far away from Barcelona, like 100 miles, called Olot.
In Catalonia?
Yeah, in Catalonia, always. Mm-hmm. And then we moved back to Barcelona, and my grandparents, they had a restaurant there, so in the neighborhood Sagrada Familia.
So what kind of restaurant was it?
It was like a very traditional, obviously, traditional restaurant that we used to do like a breakfast and lunch menus.
Mm-hmm.
Dinner was closed, so mm-hmm. we used to close at 7 o'clock in the afternoon, in the evening.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like just a regular market.
Okay, regular to you. Tell me, what was a breakfast like in that restaurant?
Savory dishes.
Savory. So what would people eat? What time would they eat it? Because you guys stay up really late. Like, you eat at midnight or something, or 10 o'clock at night.
Spain,
so what
yes.
time do you have breakfast? 2 in the afternoon?
Or? Like, no, breakfast, I will say between 8 and 9:30.
Uh-huh.
Like, people, they used to, like, the restaurant was open at 7.
Uh-huh.
And the chefs, they were coming. My grandmother, she will start, like, at 7 in the kitchen, prepare breakfast, and then leave to the market. And it was 7, and they used to make, like, you know, Spanish omelets, capipota, like chickpeas with capipota was like kind of like a veal head stew with this kind
a
of
veal
dishes.
Head stew.
Yeah, they will eat this in Spain, in Barcelona. Yeah, with
women?
Chickpeas.
Women and men.
More men. It was in a neighborhood like where like people. It was people from factories going there for
uh-huh.
breakfast.
Yeah, they needed something.
They needed
hearty.
Something hearty. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
then what was the lunch menu like?
Lunch menu was like a menú del día in Barcelona. In that restaurant, this family restaurant was like a first course, a salad. First course could be like any, you know, like a soup or lentil soup or, you know, Then the entrees will be like rabbit, cannellones, which is very classic in Barcelona, even if it looks like an Italian dish in Barcelona. Cannellones are very classic, rabbit dishes.
Is there a lot of pasta? Cannelloni is a pasta,
cannelloni
right?
is a pasta.
And, and is it the same kind as an Italian pasta?
Well, the filling was pork. And then,
but how about the pasta itself?
The pasta was kind of it's Spanish pasta, but
is there a difference between Spanish pasta and Italian pasta?
We don't like in, at that time, I remember like we didn't do like fresh pasta. It was kind of a dry cannelloni pasta
that you would buy already.
You buy and then you boil.
Boil it. And, okay.
And then you roll these cannellonis that you make.
It's probably bought from Italy, right?
No. Actually, El Pavo is the brand. And, yes. And it was a Spanish brand. Actually.
It was a Spanish brand. Yeah. Okay. I'm glad to
They're
hear
different,
that. Okay. Don't.
And then you could eat like pies de cerdo, which is like pig feet, stews and stuff like that. So it was pretty like hearty.
This sounds like a chef's dream. Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah.
That's what chefs eat after getting off of
I
work.
Love it.
I love it. Love it.
Yeah.
So I was in Barcelona last June,
mm-hmm.
and I went crazy for the market there.
The market.
Yeah. I mean, I've been in markets all over the world, and the Boqueria, which is the name of your restaurant.
Mm.
But the market in Barcelona is called the Boqueria. It is spectacular. It's mm-hmm. worth going to Barcelona just for the Boqueria. I've never seen anything like it in my life.
Mm-hmm.
I just love it. What was it like as a little kid walking into that market? What do you remember?
It was amazing. Like, I will say that because I was from another neighborhood in Barcelona, you can find there's so many great markets in the city. Like, every neighborhood has an amazing market. Like, Boqueria is the main market in the city, and it was probably the first one, you know, back 400 years ago. I don't know, like, Boqueria is like where the place where they used to cut like the animals. They started like this, and then they built
the market around
market.
It. So they were the slaughterhouses, and then they because it's not far from the port.
It's very close, like half a mile, I would say. Yeah,
yeah. So what visually do you remember seeing in the market when you were, any of the markets when you were six
like,
or 7 years old?
Amazing product, no? Like fresh seafood. Seafood is amazing in the Mediterranean Sea.
Mm.
And, you know, like vegetables. The Boqueria market is like, you can get anything right now, no? Like it's
you presume the hams are going to be there. But when you said vegetables, these are vegetables that are so colorful, deep,
mm-hmm.
the smells, the proliferation, and the different kinds of vegetables that I had never seen before.
Mm-hmm.
The peppers were...
Yeah. Yeah, it's...
Breathtaking.
It's crazy. It's crazy. Yeah, I don't know, like, you know, all this crazy thing about the local stuff, and in Spain it's been always like this, no? We always cook.
So you just breathe it. You don't think about it.
Yeah.
So did you know from when you were a little boy you wanted to be a chef?
Well, I was, you know, in this family restaurant, and I was a pretty bad student, so, you know, it was a point of my life that I had to, you know, decide what to do with my life, and then I decided to, you know, to go to culinary school, and my family was like, no, you're crazy, you're like, no, you don't want to like that, and then I started, and I became, you know, like, because I started in the class, and, you know, and I knew a little bit of the business and the restaurants and the products. And kind of I became one of the good ones at the school from being the worst kind of at the class in the elementary school.
How old were you when you were doing
I started with 14 years old.
At 14?
Yeah.
So was it, I'm going to do this because I know about it, but you weren't so passionate. But then when you got there, you got more passionate about
it? Yeah, every day. Like, I think every single day that I work in the restaurant business is like I get more in love and like
what made you more in love? Was it a teacher or was it the product?
I will say the whole thing. I don't know, like working in restaurants, you know, like with my family I worked, you know, in every single part of the restaurant. No? I was helping them with everything. But you know, like once I started the school I did stages in different places and you know, I became in love of like the cooking and you know, all the food.
What's it? You know, for a lot of people out there who don't know what the back of a restaurant is like, what's the What's the family feeling, you know, with working with your working with the other cooks? What's the feeling back there? Can you describe it?
It's like a family, no? Yeah, it's a family. Like you spend more time with these guys than you spend with your family. So it becomes kind of a place where, you know, you share everything with them, and you spend a lot of time. You know, you're working with product too, so it's kind of something different, no? Like I will say, I don't know how is it working in an office, but it's pretty special.
Well, you know, I think in an office, you're doing your work, and maybe it relates to somebody else's work, and you have meetings. Mm-hmm. But in a kitchen, you're constantly working together, right?
Yeah, everything is a team. Yeah.
Everything is a team. It's almost like being a football team.
Yeah, like we always say, you know, it's like if you have a chef that is missing one day, like it's like a kind of a show in a theater, you know. It's like if one is missing, then the whole thing it's messed up. No, it's like so you need everybody. And
so what were the kinds of things you learned in the school that you didn't learn in your family restaurant?
I think all the bases. You know, like in my family restaurant, I will, you know, learn recipes, mm-hmm. you know, like the recipes were limited because my grandmother was a chef and like she will always make these great recipes, but always kind of the same. But then you go to school and you open kind of to the rest of the, you know, like all the bases, the sauces, the, you know, the stocks and, mm-hmm. and you know, all the cooking techniques and...
So it really enlarged your vision.
Yeah, exactly. It's a good thing.
So you worked at some spectacular restaurants during your... Tell us about that. And what did you learn at each of them?
Well, I worked in... I'm very happy and I of all my kind of like learning process. I have to say that I pushed always myself. When I was very young, I pushed myself to like learn a lot and go to like... try to go to the best places. So I started, like, my first, like, super kind of big thing was, like, a restaurant called Can Gaig in Barcelona, one Michelin star. It's, like, traditional, kind of, like, with a little twist of Catalan cuisine. Mm. He's kind of one of the best chefs in Catalonia and most well-known, Carles Gaig. And I spent there a summer with them, and then I said, like, this is what I want to do, and I'm not going to...
How was that restaurant different from others to make
it was,
think it, it's
for
so
me,
special?
It was my first, like, professional kitchen. Like, it was, like, mm-hmm. everything amazingly, you know, organized, and the techniques were, like, super precise, and it was Catalan cuisine at the same time. So it was, like, what I lived... all my life, like, you know, in the beginning of my life, of my learning process. But then it was, like, kind of, like, to the other level, to the next level. So it was, I don't know, different.
So it just took you to a different level of execution in your food.
Yeah.
And
like,
understanding.
Thinking, kind
yeah,
of. Yeah.
Yeah. So then you went to the French guys, right? You went up to Alain Persat and Ducasse. Why did you go to France?
I worked in Canary Islands mm-hmm. for a summer mm-hmm. because I was so bad student, I couldn't ever travel. My parents, they will never, you know, like send me somewhere else to study English or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to travel always. Mm-hmm. It was kind of, and then I went to Canary Islands. I worked in a hotel, and then I went back to Barcelona, and a teacher, he told me, Monday you go into Paris. And I said, that was on Friday. And I said, why? And then he said, no, you're going to Paris. And I said, okay. So, you know, I was kind of...
On a Friday? Monday you're going to Paris?
Yeah.
Wow.
It was like this. And then I went to Paris to work in a restaurant that the government of Catalonia was opening a restaurant in Paris to promote the culture and the gastronomy of the Catalan... The Catalan cuisine, the Catalan culture, no? And... So I went there, I opened that restaurant with, like, amazing people, like, you know, the best sommelier of Spain, one of the best chefs at that point in Barcelona, everybody super young. And then we opened that, and I stayed there for a year. Then I went back to Barcelona. I worked in another restaurant as a pastry chef. I had the opportunity to go to El Bulli.
And you did?
And I did, because I had, like, you know, this friend, my friend of mine, he was staging there, and he said, Mark, they are short in stagiaires, these guys, so if you want to, you know, come, I think you're going
to... What was that like? What's Ferran, what's it like to work for him? Does he scream in the kitchen?
I saw him scream one day.
One day only.
One day. The rest of the days, like, he didn't need to, but it was like kind of like... You knew that you were in one of the best restaurants in the world. And it was a lot of people working in the kitchen.
There's very huge very amount, organized. 20-something people.
We were 40-something.
40-something. Yeah. I heard it was huge. So what do you work on? Do you work on one little thing?
Well, I spent the first 2 weeks in the prep kitchen. So just prepping. And then after that, they passed me to one of the stations, and I worked with the chef de partie, you know, like we were three or four in the...
And were you doing spherification and
not at that point, because that was in 2000.
Uh-huh.
He started, like, at that point, it was more like hot gelatins with agar-agar. And
so he had started on the using different
techniques. He already did the foams and all that stuff.
Right.
But it was more like that year was more like about the hot gelatins.
Mm-hmm.
And but still, like, a lot of the food was like, I remember the sardine, like fillet of sardine with a super sliced tin of bread put on top, and then seared a la plancha with like a romesco, deconstructed romesco sauce, which is kind of or picada was kind of, and it was amazing. It was like super simple and, you know, and extremely.
Does he sit there and think these things up, and then everybody executes, or does he ask the cooks for their opinion?
I think in El Bulli, my period there was super short, so I don't know, but I think they have everything pre-organized, so they don't improvise.
Yeah, or the chefs don't really say, hey, let's add a little of this.
No. They're super organized. They have all the recipes, write it down. And
was it different working in France for Alain Passat and Ducasse? Do the French chefs have a different atmosphere in their kitchen than the Spanish?
Alain Passat was more improvised, I will say. Like, he will get in the kitchen, put a coat on top of his shirt, and you know, get some products, whatever he had, and then cook some amazing, you know, like vegetables. Or I was at Alain Passat, I was that year that he started all this vegetarian kind of menu.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, he kind of, like, he had only one fish and one pigeon dish, and he had also the chicken, the roasted slow chicken, but everything else was almost.
He has his own farm, right?
I think so now. Yeah. At that point,
at that point he didn't.
I don't think he didn't, but now I know he does.
Mm.
And then, so he was more like improvising, you know. I worked there in the pastry too, and baking all the bread. You know, this rustic, super light, amazing crust bake.
But did you walk in the kitchen bread and say, oh, you could tell this is a French kitchen? Because you learn classic technique. I mean, in Italy and Spain, they use the basic technique that the French codified. They didn't necessarily create it, but they codified it. But could you tell, was there an atmosphere? Was there just a system that was different that you said, oh, this is very French compared to being Spanish?
I would say there were more focus on the product than the technique in France.
Mm-hmm.
Because in my learning process in Spain, I worked in these restaurants that they were, like, if I'm thinking about Can Gaig, this first restaurant, it was about product and Catalan cuisine. But El Bulli was more about technique. Also great product, but the technique was very important.
No? Mm.
And when I moved to France, it was like more about, like, you know, more classic recipes. You know, a lot of, obviously, a lot of butter. And but it was more, you know, about the product. No, they will get a product and focus on that product and try to...
So now you're in America.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think an American kitchen focuses on?
Right
not
now,
yours. We're going to get into yours after the
right
break.
Right now, product.
Product.
I will say, yeah. And I'm, you know, very
you're
happy
as crazy
to see
about
that.
Product too.
Yeah, now it's all about product, no? And you know, like, the difference between you know, that I, like, for a Spanish chef that comes to the States, here people, like, we, like, in Spain is all, like, if you go to a regular restaurant at the Boqueria market, they will focus on the product. You will get, seared gambas, shrimp, just a la plancha with olive oil and a little bit of kosher salt on top, and that's it. And here, like, people expect a little bit more, no? They want, like, you know, crunchy and acidic, something acidic on the dish, like something buttery, so, like, you know, kind of like a mix of different flavors and textures, and which is great. I think I like it, and I'm kind of adapting myself to it.
Well,
to
we're going to get it. Okay, we're going to take a break right here, and when we come back, we're going to start talking about you and your personal style.
Okay.
Thanks for listening. You're listening to Chef's Story, and we'll be right back.
Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Are you a locavore? Our Northeast regional forager for Whole Foods Market sure is. She spends her time traveling around the New York City metro area sourcing the best new or interesting artisanal and handcrafted local products for our purchasing teams at the local store level. Part of our commitment to our local suppliers includes assisting them with the process of getting their products sold at our stores. Whether it's suggesting packaging designs, pricing, or distribution methods, she's helping some of the area's best new products reach savvy shoppers at Whole Foods Market stores. Today, New York. Tomorrow, the world. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Chef's Story. I'm Dorothy Cann Hamilton, and today my guest is Mark Vidal from Boqueria. But before we get into your story, I've got to remind the listeners out there that this is Membership Month. And if you like Chef's Story, if you like all of this great programming on Heritage Radio Network, it doesn't come for free, and we need your help. And what you can become is a member, and we'll be in contact with you, and we have lots of great parties. And you know how hard it is to get a seat at Roberta's. If you come to our parties, it makes it a lot easier, and you meet all the cool people out here. So, go to the website, sign up, and we'll see you out here. So, today we're back with Mark Vidal, one of the great Barcelonian chefs. And he has great restaurants in New York called Boqueria, named after the Mercato in Barcelona. But Mark, tell me, how did you get to the States, and why did you come?
I was in Barcelona working in a hotel. When I was 26, they offered me this job in Barcelona to run a big hotel and opening gastronomy kind of fine dining restaurant in the top of the hotel. And then I was there, and then a friend of mine told me that somebody was looking to open a restaurant in Miami. And then I said, okay, you know, I was kind of happy there, you know, I was happy, but I always wanted to learn English and, you know, travel a little bit more because I always wanted to travel. And then they offered me, and I said, okay, so I and getting all this process, you know, with different chefs, and then they give me an offer. And then I said, okay, I'm going 2 years, and then I'm coming back, no, because I want to spend my life in Barcelona and my time there. And then, I start with this restaurant in Coral Gables called Porfin. It was a restaurant that, it was more fine dining, but very, you know, tapas and kind of like a few appetizers as a tapas, and then like main course dishes. like a little bit refine it for like for what I end up doing at the end. But it was a fun place to work, and then. Then a couple of years after, they offered me another job at the W Hotel in South Beach to open a restaurant called Solea, which was a great opportunity for me with Karim and Nicola Siervo from K&R Group. And we opened the restaurant. It went very well. And then, you know, a few, like a year after, Yann de Rochefort called me to come to New York, and it was pretty exciting, and to come to a city like this.
How long you been here now?
2.5.
Are you a New Yorker now?
I think so.
I know. You know, New Yorkers are not born; they're made. You know, there are people who are born in Kansas and in Barcelona, but they're born New Yorkers. Mm-hmm. So when you get here, you either know you belong or you don't.
Yeah.
Okay. So tell us. You know, tell us about Spanish cuisine. Now is the hottest cuisine in America. There are restaurants opening up. There are even people like Michael Chiarello, who's known for Italian. He's opening a Spanish restaurant. Mm. I mean, what is a Spanish restaurant? And then what is Boqueria?
I think, one of the greatest things that Spain has is, like, tapas. And tapas is, like, something like it's a way of life. It's something fun. It's something that you know, it's something to enjoy, to share. And and I think people here, they like that, no? And that's easy to like, no? Probably.
It's very easy to like. But you know, we were never used to eating small dishes. Mm-hmm. And that's what tapas is ordering lots of small dishes that are exquisite. So is that Boqueria is basically a tapas restaurant. So how do you think of, I mean, if you're hungry and you want a whole meal, how do you think of a meal in small dishes? And when you as the chef, do you think of these dishes in, well, if you order this, you should order these other three? Or is it just here's all these dishes independently and pick and choose as you like? How does it work in your mind when you're conceiving your menus?
Our restaurant has like two menus basically. One is our basics of the tapas that you can find anywhere in Spain, you know? Mm-hmm. Like all the classics, you know? Our DNA. And then we have a market menu which is like changed daily, you know, like with the stuff that we can find around here and make our own dishes with a little bit of, you know, like never forgetting where we're coming from, no? And I will say, like, you start with, you know, like, we have fried food and then we have some vegetables and you want to end up a meal with a paella, and some markets, I don't know, like.
What about the jamón?
Jamón, always.
Yeah. Always.
Jamón, pan con tomate.
And pate de tomate.
Pan con tomate.
Tell about the bread and the tomato.
Bread and tomato is like, it's a classic. You can eat in a sandwich. It's like the main kind of tapa or dish in Catalonia. It's bread, you know, toasted, a little bit toasted, slightly toasted. You want a little bit soft in the middle and then just grated tomatoes on top. You can grate it or you can just cut a tomato in half and then squeeze that tomato. Mm. Olive oil and salt. That's kind of amazing.
Do you use a special salt?
We use Maldon salt.
I love Maldon salt.
So it gets kind of...
That's
like
English salt. Did you use that in Barcelona?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah. Oh. A lot of people use that one. There are great salts now in Spain, but we are used to this one. We like the you know, the flavor, that the explosion of these flavors that give this
and
salt.
The flakiness of the Maldon salt is really great.
So we're used to this one and we're using it. So
have you conceived a tapas dish that's your own? I mean, you become very original. They're very classic dishes, tapas dishes.
But
tell us about some that you feel ownership of. That you think are signature dishes?
I will say on the base menu, like this regular menu, like there's nothing that is like signature or my own thing. It's like, what I said, is like something that you can find anywhere. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we give, you know, every recipe has our little touch, no? It's a different patatas bravas or shrimp, garlic shrimp, or like we always put a little bit of our, you know, how we think it will be better. But the tapas, you know, the market menu is the one that we enjoy the most. And with our chefs in the restaurants in Washington and here in New York, it's like where we have more fun, no? Because we...
So you have the Market Boqueria in Barcelona. Where do you go here to get inspired by the market?
Well, in Union Square.
I have a
meeting with my chefs every Friday there, and we, you know, we have some ideas, and we put together ideas that with the stuff that we can see there, and then we run specials the week after, and we keep them for a couple of weeks, and then we change, and you know, it's like changing every day something, so nobody gets bored.
Do you have direct relationships with the farmers there, because that you have to buy in bulk, or do you just go around and just
we go see? Around. We have a couple that we, you know, we always buy something, but we go around and we pick some stuff, we fill up a cab and go to the restaurant. So that's how we do it.
And so now, tell me about the jamon.
Jamon.
Yeah, there's so many types of jamon. That was the thing in the markets in Spain, different qualities, but they, you know, everyone has we have country ham here, and the Italians have prosciutto, but jamon ibérico is like nothing I've ever tasted in my life. It is so unctuous.
Amazing.
And the depth, oh, and the fat in your, oh, it's
yeah. So they're peaks from, you know, Iberian peaks. That they're like growing in like this, you know, they eat acorns for the last 3 months.
They're in the forest.
In the forest. They
How big do they get? Are they little like, pigs or big?
No,
pigs?
They're big. They're pretty big.
Hundreds of pounds.
Yeah. 300 pounds, I will say. Mm-hmm.
And is it the ham from the leg?
The ham is from the leg, and then the shoulder is called paleta, and both are very good. You know, the more expensive one and the more like value kind of ham is the one from the ham. But the shoulder is amazing. It's like we have shoulder some at the restaurant sometimes, and it's like it's
super buttery. Is that smoked like the ham or
it's
aged?
Not smoked?
No,
it's no. Like they salt, they cure them in salt, and then they hang them for months until they get cured.
What kind of salt do they cure them in?
Just like,
regular Spanish salt.
No, I'm not sure. I'm not sure about what kind of salt they use, but.
So, what do they do with the rest of the pig?
They do like a lot of things: the salchichones, chorizos. They eat every part of the pig.
Is chorizo always Iberico pigs?
Not always. Chorizo could be like from regular pigs, but if you do a chorizo Iberico, then you have a really tasty chorizo, much better quality, obviously.
So Iberico ham, is that pate negro, the black-footed pig?
Exactly.
Okay, so the name of the pig is pate negro?
The name of the pig, it's a kind of pig called Iberian pig.
Okay, so is that that's the area?
The pate negro is the black-footed.
Black-footed pig.
Pig, yeah.
And the Iberico is the area it comes from.
Yeah. But they're called also the race of the pig. It's Iberico.
Oh, the race of the pig is called Iberico too. Mm. So they only recently were able to import this in the United States. Is it easy to find? Retail wise, I know. Is it easy for you to buy now?
Well, if you want to buy for your home, I would recommend you to go to a store called España. In Soho.
Yeah, on Broom Street, right?
In Broom Street, yeah. They have great jamones. There's a couple brands. One of them is like Cinco Jotas, which is kind of like the one of the top brands in Spain too. So
And really La Tienda, is there online?
La Tienda online, yeah.
Online. I think they were very instrumental, as was Jose Andres, in getting their legislation passed so we could get these pigs. What other products from Spain do you think are, you know, quintessential Spanish flavor that you don't find in any other country?
I would say piquillo peppers definitely are like one of the greatest products we have. I always said that here people can seafood, they don't really like it, but we have great canned seafood.
Canned seafood,
amazing.
Really,
yeah,
like what?
like clams, razor clams. Yeah, mussels.
How do you work with them? What kind of dish do you put them in?
I just open them and put a little spicy sauce on top and eat it like this. That's how we eat it in Spain.
So do they sell those canned?
At the España you can find
at
them.
At España, yeah. And probably on Lentiende.
Yeah.
So that's incredible. I've never done that. I have to buy a can and try it.
There is a sauce called Espinalé. I never seen it in the States, but I'm trying to push like suppliers to bring that sauce. It's like kind of a spicy red sauce that in Spain there are restaurants that they just open these cans, they put it in a plate, and they put this sauce on top, and it's like aperitivo, amazing.
My
aperitivo.
Gosh, that's fast food. That should be our fast food, not, you know, French fries, frozen French fries out of the...
And then the anchovies, no? The sulky anchovies is another one of the greatest.
And the salted capers?
Yeah, not that... I would stay with the anchovies.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, anchovies is like caviar for us. So it's
So what's your future plans? Is there something you want to do with your personal cuisine that, you know, I'm not saying next year, but you know, 10 years from now. What do you think that far out?
I don't want to think too much. I like to, you know, live my day, you know, enjoy my every day, but I want to, you know, like I want to do more things like cooking, and with Boqueria I'm planning to do more things and you know, like try to bring to Americans our kind of culture and our gastronomy.
We don't have much time left, but to wind down, what do you want people to say when they walk out of your restaurant?
Well, that they had a great meal, I guess.
Goes without saying.
Yeah. And, you know, that they had a good time.
Yeah.
That's the most important, no? Like, they enjoyed, they had a good service, they loved the food, they thought the food is high-quality food. Even if it's a tapas restaurant, no, that normally people can say, oh, I don't know, you know. But if we use great products and we cook them well, that's what we want, no, people.
All right, so now you've got a few boquerias. Why don't you tell everybody where they are now that we've made everybody want to go there?
The first one was Boqueria 19th Street between 5th and 6th in Manhattan. Mm-hmm. And the other one in Soho, Spring Street between Thompson and West Broadway. And then we have another one in Washington, D.C. that we opened last year.
Ah.
And
where's that?
It's in 19th and M in DuPont Circle area. Great restaurant, all three of them.
Okay, all right. So I think actually we're gonna, for the first time, you know, we're gonna go out and eat a pizza here in Roberta's, but I wish we were having some of your tapas. Thanks for coming today, Mark. And thanks for listening. You've been listening to Chef's Story, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.